Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome back. This is Dr. Gary Penn, and thanks for listening to my podcast. It's been, I don't know, maybe 2 or 3 weeks since we last posted. So I'm glad that you're here. I'm really happy today because I get to interview someone who I think is terrific, and it's always fun for me to interview really smart people who are in their lives and in their worlds and trying to figure out things. And you know, sometimes, have you ever met somebody that just is kind of like 70 or 80 years old? And a lot of times it's our parents, unfortunately, but they're kind of like the same way they were when they were young, 20 or 30 or 40 or 50, and they don't seem to evolve. And so when I get to speak to people who are just in their lives and into changing and kind of proving that evolution does exist, it's kind of fun. I'm happy to be interviewing Bobby Palmer, who is she's a dating coach, but it seems like a lot more. She's a dating and relationship coach for women over 40. So it's a very specific audience. I mean, I imagine that as we get into it today, that it will be right for a lot of people, not just women, but men and teenagers and what have you. But it's specializing for women over 40. And she's a founder of Date Like a Grown Up. And she's a champion love coach to mature women around the world. She helps single, smart, independent women find lasting love, which is terrific. She has her own dating success story, but we'll get into that as well. And we'll figure that out, and we'll talk about that. She's been on a lot of hold on a second. I'm fiddling right now. She's been a lot of media. She's been on the Today Show. And she's the author of Confessions of the World's Worst Dater. That's pretty funny. I really do like that. Well, let's get into it. Instead of me just reading her bio, let's get into it. Bobby, welcome aboard.
Thank you. I'm really glad to be here.
Yeah.
I love that you laughed at my book title. Thank you. It's my life story.
Yeah, well, Yeah. The title of my book is I Can't Believe My Life Has Come to This. So, so I appreciate a title of a book that kind of hits a bullseye.
Yeah.
And so tell me about yourself and tell me about the arc of your life and your evolution as to how you get here on my podcast, which I'm sure is not the pinnacle of your life, but how you got in this place in your life.
Okay. Well, being here is a great part of my life. How's that? Yeah.
Well, I'll accept that. That's
okay,
fine.
That
fits my narcissism. So go ahead.
Perfect. I always like to compliment people I like. So the way I got here, for many, many years, being a single woman who had a successful career, sort of moved between being like obsessively focused on my career and then being obsessively focused on finding a mate and loving men and hating men and loving myself and hating myself and dating every which way possible over like decades. So I really tried to figure this out for about 30 years.
Why would you hate yourself?
Wow. You know, I think it's, unfortunately, it's not uncommon, especially for women. And especially for women my age, you've messages that are telling you you're not okay. And I think if you didn't really grow up with somebody at your side constantly telling you you are okay, those messages get in. And we believe them. I'm too fat. I'm too short. My hair is too straight. My hair is too curly. And in our teenage years, for girls, it's all about being popular and the boys liking us. I mean, that's what we live for. In my generation,
okay.
I should say.
I got you. So continue on. So you were in this place of loving, hating, confusion, just swings of self-esteem and low self-esteem. And so then what happened?
And then in my, when I turned about 43, 44, I was still single and very, very single. And again, I've just tried like every way to meet a partner and thought I was working so hard at it and couldn't figure out what the heck was going on. And I had a few epiphanies. I went to therapy. At the time, there weren't dating coaches. I worked with a therapist. I did a lot of reading. I did seminars. I really just sort of put a line in the sand, and my first epiphany was, I want the love of a man in my life. Period. And the reason that was an epiphany is because there was always some sort of qualifier. Like, I want a man, but if I don't find one, that's okay. You know, I want a partner, but he has to be like this or forget it. There was always something that gave me an escape, gave me an out. And so this to me was an epiphany. It was like, damn it, I want this. And I'm going to get it. And that set me on that path to like really focus, make it a focus of my life, learn what I had to learn about myself, about men, about love, about being loved, about giving love. And at 47, I met and married my husband. And we've been together about 10 years now.
Wow.
Yeah. And you know, my background, Gary, is I'm an adult education professional. So I spent decades in the field of training and management in adult education. And after this happened to me, so many women I talked to would ask me, first of all, they always said, after I told my story, I love this, they always said, you give me hope.
Right.
And that's such a big, that's astronomical, right?
Well, you know, there's a lot of hopelessness out there.
Yeah.
There's
and with
a lot
that,
of
there's nothing. Yeah. And that, and I know, I knew that feeling personally over the years. I certainly had years I felt hopeless. And that when I started telling people my story and they said, you give me hope, then they'd follow it with, how'd you do it? And as a teacher, because what I do, I started teaching women sort of what I learned, and one thing led to another, and this is my profession. It's crazy. At the time, it was like, who does this for a living? No one's a dating coach.
Right.
But now it's, and I work, you know, I help women with dating and relationships, and it's the greatest, you know, for me, teaching women especially how to find love. I can't think of a better way to spend my life.
Yeah. Yeah, it isn't like you're fixing a toaster. I mean, it's kind of big stuff.
It's close to world peace. Yeah, it's close to figuring out world peace.
Yeah.
In my mind.
So, right. So, the thing that you, I think that you're saying is that you had a shift and you asked for something very specific and without a lot of qualifiers. I just want the love of a man. Now, obviously, we don't have to say you don't want the love of a sociopath.
Right.
You know, so there were some implied qualifiers, but you wanted maybe just the love of a healthy, psychologically healthy, available man to have his
I
love.
I wanted a partner for life. I was tired of doing it all alone. So, right, I wanted a real partner. Go ahead, sorry.
Go ahead. No, you go ahead. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say that sort of my second, and this is actually in my book, my second epiphany, which was really important too, was that it was all about me. That it couldn't be all these hundreds of men that I connected with and dated over all these decades. It couldn't be all their fault. I finally had to realize it was me. It was me that was creating the landmines and the walls. And
why were you doing that? Do you have any insight as to why? Now, usually, at least in my field, it starts with D and ends with D, or it starts with M and ends with M. Did you figure that one out? It's a puzzle.
I'm thinking. Can you see my brain working? I'm thinking.
Well, it's three letters. It starts with D and ends with D. And it's three letters and it starts with an M.
Oh, dad and mom. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
So usually those are the things, if you find that you have these these ideas or these this need for protection,
mm-hmm.
or these kind of warping of reality perceptions, it's usually based on our primary love objects.
Absolutely.
Is that true with you?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, you nailed it. And not just true with me, but I'll tell you what's really interesting that I've learned over the years. My experience was being raised, and I use that term loosely, by a narcissistic mother. She's just the quintessential narcissist. Remains that way at 87 years old. And interestingly enough, the women that I work with specifically who are so much like I was, right? You know, 40s, 50s, 60s, even I've got clients in their 70s, but doing really well in career, like the rest of their life is really great. And they've learned how to manage. But this part of their life, the part of what I consider the ability to love and be loved, wasn't working. And the vast majority of these women describe their one or both of their parents as being narcissistic. And I think it's an overused term.
Well, tell me how that would look like. Give me a little snapshot of an interaction with your mom that would show, let's say, someone who didn't, show me a narcissistic interaction.
Yeah.
What that looks like.
Oh, gosh. Where can I begin? I think here's sort of a really good one. I was very involved in a political campaign several years ago, and I was managing all this fundraising. And in the middle of this giant fundraising event that I was managing, running around like a crazy person, my mother, who was a guest of mine, called me over, and I went over there, and she said, "I'm so glad I taught you how to be interested in politics." Everything reflected back to her.
That's a good one. Yeah.
That's a good example, right?
Yeah.
And it was just her whole, everything was about her. And she was also depressed.
No, but you also want to think, Bobby, it's not that that's bad in and of itself, which it is, but it's also the deficit of, honey, I am amazed at how brilliant and how successful you are.
Mm-hmm.
And how you're keeping all these things in the air and how people listen to you and you're navigating these waters. I'm bursting with pride. It's just so wonderful to see you like this. So it isn't just what she said that was really crappy, but it's also what she didn't say, which is just as bad, if not worse.
Yeah. Yeah. And there was never any of that. I mean, when I finally got married, you think mom would be my dad was so excited. My mother was like, okay, here are the people I want to invite. here's a list of people I want to invite. Yeah, so I didn't get that from her. And, I went to a lot, I went through a lot of therapy and I realized it was about her and it was her illness. And it's the same thing with women that I support. We get it intellectually, but my father just, a man of the 50s, just worked. And try to keep...
Well, that's a good excuse, but it's like, that's always a good excuse. We always like to give people a get-out-of-jail-free card. But, it's basically we don't have to get into that so much, but it's I love it when people say, my dad tried the best he could or things like that. And you're going, he's part of the equation.
You're so right on.
Because you're his daughter, and you were helpless. You're totally helpless. And you can't say, but I was working. It's not something that you can just say. It doesn't make it all okay. And the other part, of course, is when we take ownership as children, we do take ownership when people treat us poorly.
Right.
Children are very egocentric and the world revolves around them. And, they think they make things happen. So if mom's yelling at me, And I'm 4 years old. I don't have the wherewithal to think that my mom's a lunatic or she was molested or she's mm-hmm. emotionally unstable or depressed. I just think mom's yelling at me because I'm a bad boy.
And I'm unlovable.
And I'm unlovable. So it's mm-hmm. just like if you're, you know, you're told a story when you're a little girl that, well, you know, Jesus is the Son of God and there's a place called heaven, you would identify yourself as a Christian. And if your parents right. said, no, Jesus was just a rabbi, you would identify yourself as a Jew.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's our
if
truth.
Your parents tell you that you're unlovable, you go, I'm lovable, just the way you would think you're Jewish or Christian. It wouldn't be any difference. It would be the exact way of knowing yourself. And you wouldn't even think, like, why am I being so mean to myself? You would just say, well, I'm a Jew and I'm unlovable.
That's right. It's exactly right.
Right?
Actually,
so
I did learn I was a Jew
it.
And I was unlovable. Yes.
Right.
You nailed
so
it.
So it's all like, yeah, so it all makes sense. It's like, and it isn't like you're self-hating. You're just, well, I'm an American. I'm a Jew. I'm unlovable.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And, you know, so I have a six-step system that I developed mostly from my journey and my experience. And then, of course, you know, renewing it, you know, with my experience with other women. And my second step, my first step is falling in love with your grown-up sexy self. And that's
nice.
All about looking at yourself through your lens of who you are today and not based on who your parents saw or who your ex saw or what the media has decided you are. Mm-hmm. And it's falling in love. It's doing that self-love piece. But the second step I call, I'm fabulous, so what's the damn problem? And that's all about, we walk around in the world going, I'm fabulous, look at me, I have these great friends, and I travel, and I have a good career, and I'm a good person. But deep down, for women like me, we don't feel good. We don't feel lovable. And that step is the process of really identifying what your quote-unquote truths are. Just like you were talking about, what did you learn mm-hmm. that were true? And really unpacking, like it's gruesome, just really like ripping them out
of you. It's very, very hard. It's very, mm-hmm. very hard because that's when the concrete was poured. And it's your true, true self. You know, if I think that I'm worthless and if my mother, let's say, told me I was worthless and I'm in the dating world And I'm talking to you, and I say, you know, Bobby, I really want someone who's going to really love me and think I'm terrific and values me for who I am and, you know, and doesn't want some kind of other person, unattainable, but really loves me exactly as I am. And I would really mean that. Mm-hmm. But if I met two women at a party and one looks at me and says, Gary, you're amazing. I love what you do and you're really funny and you're smart and I'm really attracted to you. I would look at her and say, like, what's wrong with you?
Yeah.
Either I would think that you're playing me and you're just making up, you know, or even if you for some reason believe it, you're going to find out eventually what kind of loser I am.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm not going to trust you. And then if I meet another woman and she says, you know, Gary, you lost some hair and, you know, you don't make as much money as I'm hoping and your jokes are kind of immature, but she'll go out with me. I go, God, how do you know me so well? Like for some reason, I feel like you know me so well.
Yeah.
And I'm going to take you to a restaurant that I really can't afford. Because my goal is to turn you and to say, if you can love me, then I'm really lovable.
Right. It's right. It's all external, and it's about being right. Also, right, right, Gary. We as human beings, we want to be right. So, for women, for instance, if your truth is, it's just like you're saying, if your truth is, I'm not a woman that men find attractive, then that's who you're going to be. And a lot of it's unconscious. You're the one, you know, you're out in the world looking down. You're not talking to men or to people. You're not
mm-hmm.
dressing or wearing makeup the way you might.
So true.
You're creating
so true.
Your own reality so that
you
can be right.
I tell a lot of my female patients who are struggling with exactly what you're talking about, I say, wear lingerie under your clothes. Even if you're wearing like jeans and or what have you, just wear lingerie because you want to feel sexy.
Yeah.
So
we
even
lose
if
it.
You don't, yeah, you just have to like get in touch with that because a lot of times people just become so closed off.
And see, this is where the work that I do with older women is especially true because you look at women, especially in their 50s and older, you know, they were raised in a certain way with their parents of the 50s, and then they went through, you know, the women's movement. And by the way, the message from that was we don't need no stinking men, and you could do it all yourself. And then we fought our way through to the, you know, and hit the glass ceiling, and, you know, men were our enemy there. And so many women, we've learned to be really independent, and we've taken care of ourselves, and we wear that as a badge of honor. And what that does is it just keeps us in our masculine all the time, and our feminine is something that we don't value. And we don't even know it anymore. That's why I call that first step, you know, falling in love with your grown up sexy self is like, okay, I know that you're resourceful, I know that you're intelligent, I know that you're, you know, successful, I know that you can do this and do that, but wait, who are you? What do you feel? What do you value? What do you care about? What makes you cry? What makes, you know, like, where is that emotional, nurturing, lovely, kind, funny woman? Because she's in there, and it makes such a difference in life to bring her out. Life is so
much
fuller.
Can I tell you the other side of that, though? Could I tell you the other side from the man's perspective?
Please.
So since the 70s, you know, the women have been really, and rightly so, a lot of attention has been paid to girls in schools and, you know, self-esteem and becoming their own person. And the boys have been kind of ignored. I think a lot of society thought that the boys were just okay and everything, you know, we don't need to help them. We need to really help the women to catch up, the girls to catch up to the boys. And I think what I see is that men are just totally lost these days. And women, in my practice, I would say probably at least half of the women that I see, at least half make more money or make the only money in the family. So women are smarter than men these days. Women are more successful. Women are more psychologically aware. And the men are just totally lost, completely lost. They, you know, back in the day, back in the 60s and 70s, men could have, this is not so much true on the coast where we live, but certainly in middle America is, men could have a big manufacturing job, and a man can make, you know, $100,000 a year, and be very blue collar and provide a family and a house. And we don't have that anymore. So we've kind of lost completely our masculinity. And we're like these lost boys, and a lot of times men will try to make that up by becoming sexual athletes or by telling women, you know, you're so beautiful, you're amazing, and texting you before after the first date and becoming really kind of like, let me tell you how amazing you are, because men don't like, they just, we're just so lost. And, you know, and for the people I work with who are people of color, like an African-American woman, they say, I can't find a brother who wants me.
Yeah.
You know, if they want me, if they're successful, they don't want a black woman.
Yeah.
And they're struggling, and they want to connect with someone. So men, you know, the dating pool, we're just like the lost boys.
I hear it. I understand that. I do. I think that you could add to it too, being sort of lost about what women want. Would you say that's true of men? Like, do we, if I open the door for her, will she thank me or tell me that I can't say the word, but, you know, F off? Or, because, so yeah, I hear what you're saying, and it's really confusing.
really confusing.
And women are very powerful.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, women are really, really powerful. And so men are kind of just so floundering. We're just floundering right now. There's no middle class. You know, and for men, it's all about, you know, men, I use this analogy all the time, but we do have to achieve an erection. And, you know, and we have to create something. And when we can't create something, we're kind of, so we don't know what to do.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of the problems that you have had or women have is that it's not like it's, yeah, maybe your heart may be closed or maybe you may be, you know, worrying about, you know, working on your career. But it is true that sometimes men are just really kind of lost as well.
I hear you, and I agree with you. I would describe women as lost, too. I mean, I haven't thought of it that way before. But we get lost between who we want to be. Do we want to be that powerful businesswoman? Or do we want to be that sweet woman who tells your man how great he is so that he feels better? And why can't we be both? Because what I teach my clients is kindness and empathy are the key, like the foundation of any dating, any relationship. Kindness and empathy. And what you're talking about in terms of how men are lost, women can really, I do see that. Not as much with older men, because different generation.
Sure.
But when I talk to women about supporting their man, you know, sometimes I hear this, like, why do I need to do that for him? You know, if I need to do that for him and, you know, he's just not confident, then I don't want him. That's where the man that you're talking about really gets screwed.
Well, I would say, let me challenge you a little bit. I would say that I would want to be authentic and have a sense of self-awareness in dating. I want to say what I mean and mean what I say.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of times when people are kind, they're very empathic, I would say a lot of times that could be a trap to being, like, you know, our tendency, a good person's tendency, or even if a person, like, let's say, who grew up in a tough home, it doesn't sound like it was like abusive, but it was a tough home with a narcissistic mother. You still loved your mother. I mean, we love our parents, even if our parents beat us, even if our parents sexually misuse us, we love them because that's when we're young. We could also hate them, of course, but we still love them. And so if we meet somebody and our tendency is to find good in people, and, you know, then a lot of times a woman could keep on picking a man because she's really expert at finding the goodness in him. When there are like four deal breakers that you have to completely ignore, because you've decided, like, I'm a kind person and who, you know, he's a nice guy and, you know, and so then we make excuses for them the way we made excuses for our mother or our father. Yeah. And then we're like kind of in this cycle and then you're 4 months in and then you have sex with the person and then maybe the sex was good and you go, oh my God, now I'm hooked. And then you're 2 years into a relationship where there's really no, you know.
Yeah.
You could write the script, right?
Lived it, see it every day. You know, that's like the woman who said to me in a workshop I did, who said, was talking about this guy who was really nice and really great. And I call this the yeah buts, the even though's. Like, he's a really nice guy, even though, you know, he drinks an awful lot and he uses the N-word. Do you think I should still go out with him? You know? I swear, it's what she said. And I just looked at her and I said, okay, so let me just ask you, are those two things on your list of your must-haves, you know, that a guy drinks and uses the N-word? So, yeah, I see it all the time. So thank you for calling me on that, because there's a bigger piece of it. And that's actually, you led me to my step three, because my step three is, who is he getting past your list? And that's all about really defining your must-haves. But I don't do must-haves like, he has to be this tall and this educated and all that nonsense. My must-haves are, how must I feel? How do I need to feel in order to be happy?
Oh, and I like that. That's good.
If you stick with those, then even your empathy won't get in the way over, your must-haves will win, because he has to have all of those. It's like a car can't have three wheels. So if one of my must-haves is, I have to feel safe, I have to feel valued, I have to feel sexy, you know, then somebody like somebody that drinks too much or is financially irresponsible or whatever, if you don't feel safe with him, even if you like him and you feel for him, no good. And that's hard. This is one really hard to teach women, because you nailed it.
Oh,
it's like,
sure.
It's the even those that,
So like a lot of times I tell women that they have to be tougher, and to not tough in a tough way, but kind of like, I tell my patients, let's not have maximum standards. Let's have minimum standards.
Mm-hmm.
And so let's just go with minimum standards. So that means that if you're looking for someone who doesn't have to make $200,000 a year, doesn't have to own a big home, how about if I call someone on a Monday at 9 o'clock and let's say I've been out with, a woman's been out with someone for four dates, and she calls, she leaves him a message, a text message Monday at 9 a.m. in the morning, and he doesn't get back to her till Wednesday evening.
Yeah.
I would say, that would be something that wouldn't work for me if I were doing that with someone. And a lot of times what people get caught in, what they get trapped into, like a woman or a man, but a lot of times a woman will say, why didn't you get back to me?
Yeah.
I texted you at 9. Now, when you ask someone a question, they'll always give you an answer. Right? They will always give you an answer. And so the person will give you some cockamamie answer. Well, I was really busy. I got caught up. And
but
I would say, well, didn't you have to, like, take a crap sometime in the last 48 hours? Couldn't you have called and texted me and say, Gary, I'm slammed, and I'll call you Wednesday night?
Right.
So what I tell people is don't ask them why questions. Simply say, that doesn't work for me.
Yes, exactly.
That just doesn't work for me.
That's what I tell
Because
them.
A lot of times people get caught in relationships, because you know as well as I do that a lot of times we put out the representative when we date somebody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But if you wait long enough, don't we always reveal ourselves?
We do, yes. And what's really important, and what I teach my clients and the people who read my work and so forth, is the skill, of asking for what you need is a must-have skill. And most people don't know how to do it. And especially when you're asking the opposite sex, because our physiology, our brain chemistry is so different, you need to do it in a certain way. Being able to say, here's what I need, and can you do it? Not like, you better do it, but I'm checking in. Like, can we work this out? Can you do it? And if they can't, that's good information.
That's good information.
If they can, it just makes your relationship stronger, because you're developing communication so that you could both be happy. But people don't ask.
Well, let me ask you though: is it too late if you have to ask somebody? Like, it sounds like the things that you're talking about are either there or they're not there.
I'll clarify, because I hear what you're saying. I'm not saying that. And those must-haves that I'm talking about, those are things that either a man's going to make you feel safe or he's not, right? I mean,
right.
But it's the kind of thing, like, for instance, what you were just talking about. So I texted him Monday morning, and he didn't get back to me till Wednesday. But, you know, we've been dating, and we've been, you know, this is like the first, you know, it's not a regular thing. In those cases, that's what you, you know, that's what you can say is, you know, it's sort of a three-step thing, right? I really like you. I'm enjoying being with you. You're really hot in bed, you know, whatever. For me, I really like to hear from you, you know, within a reasonable amount of time after I get in touch with you, even just to tell me you're busy. That's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think you can do that?
All right, that's a fair, that's a good clarification. So talk to me about sex. Tell me
okay.
what you tell your clients, how to navigate that. If, and I'm assuming if someone is reaching out to Bobby Palmer, that they are saying, or maybe they are saying, I don't think they're saying, Bobby, I just want to get laid. Could you could you help me get laid? I'm not getting that they're looking to you to learn how to get laid. I think they're coming to you because they want a long-term, loving, monogamous relationship.
Yes. Everybody.
Is that pretty
everyone.
Much the sweet spot? So
exactly.
So that
to
is what...
Person.
Okay. So if I'm a 40, 50, 60-year-old woman and I'm looking for a long-term, monogamous relationship...
Right.
What do you coach them in regards to sex?
Oh, it's a big question. Well, there's a few things because they come, they sort of come out at different ways. There's women who, many women haven't had sex in a really long time. So they're either they've been single for a really long time, or they're coming
mm-hmm.
out of a divorce from a bad marriage. So
yep.
you know, so. They have a lot of fears around it. They have a lot of fears around, you know, being naked in front of a man and looking and being an older woman, being naked in front of a man especially, right? So,
mm-hmm.
and they also, so they don't want to go fast. Most of the women, the vast majority, they want to take their time. They
mm-hmm.
aren't going to jump into bed with anyone unless it's a committed relationship. And that I should rephrase that. They're not going to jump into bed with anyone unless they're monogamous. And
really?
So they're, yeah.
Is that what they're telling you?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, these are 56-year-old women. They don't want to get laid. They want to be made love to. And so,
well, are you sure about that?
Of course
you're sure about that. I mean, if I haven't had sex like in 10 years or 8 years or, and I finally I'm free and someone. says, you know, God, I just find you, I want to ravish you. You would think that some of them might say, let's get busy. It's been 10 years. It's like.
Very few. Very few.
Really?
They want love. They want love, and they've waited this long. And
mm-hmm.
if they just wanted to go out and get laid, they wouldn't have waited that long. They could have done that any time. But they've been struggling to find love, and that's what they're looking for. And they know, and if they don't, I tell them about oxytocin. And
yes.
when you have, right? So when you are with that guy and you're stuck, just like you mentioned it earlier, once you sleep with him, you are stuck. Physiologically,
right.
your body is, you are like a, he is like magnetized, you know, he's a magnet. And so you better
mm-hmm.
be quite sure that you're willing to be ready for what comes next. So, you know, but so that's why I talk to my women about, if they do just want to jump in bed with somebody, I talk to them about oxytocin. I talk to them about it stays in your body for 2 weeks. And if you think you can handle that, because they'll say it all the time, I can handle it. I can just sleep with a guy. Nah, doesn't happen. Every time
right.
they get hooked. So
yeah.
my women want love. And what I tell them is I teach them how to be clear to men they're dating. Like, you know, they go out 3-4 dates. They're hot for each other. You know it's coming. No
mm-hmm.
pun intended. You know they're going to end up in bed. And so
mm-hmm.
There's three. I help them make, before it happens, make a decision. What do you need before you sleep with someone? And usually number one is you need to know what's going to happen the next day in terms of your relationship. So if you want monogamy before you sleep with somebody, you need to share that.
Huh.
You need to say, this is what I need.
Right.
And you also need to talk about safe sex, because STDs are growing among women over 50 in epidemic proportions.
I did not know that.
We're not using birth control, right? So we're postmenopausal.
Oh, how interesting. I never thought of that.
Postmenopausal, people aren't using condoms, and STDs are...
It's like
are...
the 70s all over again.
Yeah, except this is not, we don't, not the fun
but
of there, it, really.
But now there's
the
STDs, though.
Good. Yes, it's they're like, seriously, if you look in CDC statistics, women over 50 are people over 50. It's really, really high. So they figure, hey, I can't get knocked up. I'm not going to use a condom. So they have to be able to talk
That's
about
so
safe
true.
Sex.
Wow.
Which is hard
so
at this
fun.
Age. At this age, it's hard to do.
Who wants to put on a condom when you're 50 or 60?
No freaking way. I have to say really honestly is I didn't practice what I'm preaching. I know how hard it is. I told my husband that first time we were together, we have to do this. And the second time it was like, yeah, screw it. Let's go for it.
Right.
So it's difficult, but it's the right thing to do. And then, you know, you need to, be able to have a conversation. If you can't talk about your relationship and you can't talk about safe sex, you shouldn't be sleeping with a guy. It's just that simple. Just run for the hills.
I know, but you're assuming that a lot of these people, the clients you're working with, my patients, are able to have the conversations because, you know, and it sounds so simple when we talk about it. I totally get it. I tell my patients, you know, when people come to me and they say, Gary, I've had a series of really tough relationships. Well, I'll ask them, well, how soon did you sleep with this person?
Mm-hmm.
And to a person, it's almost one, two, or three dates.
Yeah.
And and so, you know, we have a tendency to minimize negatives, maximize positives if we like someone.
Yep.
So I've come up with my 8-date rule that you wait a minimum of 8 dates before you have sex, which is a minimum of 8 dates. And, you know, Bobby, it's amazing the pushback I get. Equally from men and women. Women will say, are you kidding me? 8 whole dates?
Mm-hmm.
And it's just equal. I mean, men will push back and women will push back. And it's an interesting world out there where, because what I tell people is that people will reveal themselves to you. If you give them enough time, you know, they will get drunk enough times, or they will,
that's right.
You know, they will have something happen, or they'll do this, or they'll do that, where you'll say, ah, this is who you really are.
I agree, but I have a little, I don't know, secret way to accelerate that. Okay, it's not really secret, but I have something that I teach that accelerates in some ways getting to know someone.
What's that?
And I think the other thing, too, is especially when we're older, a lot of the bullshit does kind of go away. So, which is not to say that, you know, everyone's walking around mask-free. But what I do or what I tell my women is this is all about you going out in the world like as the person you are, like learning how to be real and authentic and communicate and help men get to know you. And as you help men get to know you, you're going to get to know them. And I do that by working with them on creating what I call nuggets. And nuggets are just little pieces of information about them, about their accomplishments, about dreams, what they value, where they've been, everything from, you know, I love the smell of coffee, but I don't drink coffee, to, you know, I believe that until we get the, like you were talking about, you know, until we revive the middle class and until unions come back, you know, our economy is doomed. It's little pieces of information that you share with the person appropriately that you're getting to know. And their response to what you bring is because it's so real and it's so on point, you learn from their response. And it's amazing things that come up, these conversations that these women have on first dates. And I don't think it's, I don't know, what do you think, Gary? I don't think, and remember, you know, this is, you know, older people, but talking about religion and politics and, I don't know, Larry and I did that on our first date, and we were like, yeah, we're a great match. I think it's appropriate.
Oh, I completely agree that people, a lot of times people will say to me, you know, I don't want to scare him away, or I don't want to do this, and I don't want to do this. I don't want him to think that I'm, you know, if I talk about this or what I want from life, I don't want him to think that I'm too needy. And so a lot of people will come up with this, with these things. And what I say to them is, all you're talking about is what you don't want, and that becomes your world. Mm-hmm. Tell me what you do want. I want to mean what I say. I want to say what I mean. I want to be authentic. I want to speak my truth. I want to find someone who could love me for who I am. And if you do that, I think you're really right about that. I think that's really smart what you're saying, that if you can just put yourself out there and play to win and don't play not to lose,
mm-hmm.
I think it's
oh,
kind of a big deal.
That. I love yeah, the way you say that.
Yeah. So I think that's a big deal. I think that if people can do that, then you could control, you know, if the man can't figure it out, then that's just information for you.
Yeah, and you attract the right people, and you, quote unquote, scare away the wrong people, which is exactly what you want. I mean, don't you want
to
scare a man away who doesn't agree with, like, your deepest values, you know? So that's what we're doing dating, is we're just meeting a bunch of people and learning about them. Until we find the one we want to be with. So
I was saying, I don't know if this is, speaking of politics, I was saying, like, if I were dating the last 15, 20 years, I couldn't date a Republican.
I feel the same way.
You know,
I have that in my profile.
Right. Isn't that funny? Because it's not that I'm some crazy liberal. I just couldn't. Like, I couldn't date a fundamentalist Jew or Christian or Muslim. I couldn't date someone who was just fundamentalist about anything.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't date, you know. So it's that idea of can you find a free thinker? Can you find someone who's, like I said years ago, that it's very easy to be a Republican and hate George W. Bush. Like, you don't have to be... Like, you could be a Republican and say, this guy's nuts. He's not smart.
Right.
And you don't have, it's not a political issue. It's more just of being a free thinker. Like, I'm just not going to listen to Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity. Or on the other side, if someone's just been a total head, knucklehead, dumber, like the same thing. Like, can't you just be easy with it? But people can't do that. It's just not advanced thinking.
Well, first of all, I would date you. For sure, because I'm right with you on all that. But the great thing is, you know, I think it's funny because I don't talk about my politics in, you know, my writing or any of my work really. But I attract literally 99% of the women that come to me, especially for private coaching, are women like us. You know, they have they have the same values. And they're free thinkers, and they're open-minded, and they're tolerant, and they're empathic, and they work, they do something to make the world a better place. And those people like us, we have to put ourselves out there in order to know if the person we're talking to is anywhere near. I mean, those are like most fundamental values.
Your clients sound amazing.
They sound
like they're really, like, terrific, a lot of them self-aware, and you would think that,
self-aware.
I think
it's one thing they're really missing.
Huh.
It's one thing that I really teach them, because they think they're self-aware, but that's the self they've kind of put out to the world for the last, you know, 10, 20, 30 years trying to be that, you know, Helen Reddy, I am woman chick.
Yeah.
And that is part of who they are, but it's not really in its totality
who they are. Yeah. That's smart. Yeah. There's an old Buddhist saying that we can't see our own eyebrows. And, you know, they may see themselves, but they don't see themselves how others see them.
Mm-hmm.
And, Freud talked about the goal of analysis, and Freud said that the goal of psychoanalysis is to make the unconscious conscious.
Mm.
And that if you
wow.
can make the
I never
unconscious
knew that.
And he said that if you can make the unconscious conscious, then you're able to work and love well.
Mm.
And I thought that was really smart.
It's what
smart.
We do. It's what we
yeah.
do. We
right.
help people do that.
So you work with these women and you say, let's unpack this. Let's look at this. So when you give your talks and your seminars, what's the arc of what you do? If someone was to go to one of your workshops, what would they get? What would happen? What would their be experience? What would their experience be like for them?
Well, it depends. It really depends on what kind of program. So, for instance, I mean, I do workshops on like online dating, right? Where we really focus in on the skills around online dating and the emotional sort of capacity, if you will. Or I do, I have a course on what I call, my date, like run a boot camp, which is get out of first date hell, right? So you keep meeting these guys, but you're not making connections. What do you need to learn then? But to really, when a woman works with me one-on-one, then we go through the full six-step arc. So that's everything from, you know, falling in love with yourself. And I won't give you all the steps unless you want them. But that looks like working with me for a period of time in what I call the love program. And the first three steps are all about you. So this, you're not even dating. She's really doing the work, the internal work, so that when she does go out and she does meet men, she's relaxed and she feels really great about herself and she trusts her choices and she can really enjoy herself and make meaningful connections and make good, you know, good choices. So that's sort of the full arc. So I've got a group of women in the fourth month of that right now, and they're all, a couple of them are in love and they're all dating and they're having experiences with men that they've never had before. They're loving men. The fear is gone. Because we are afraid of each other. Do you find that with
yes.
men too, with women?
Sure.
It's sad. And it's just lack of education. It's lack of knowledge. I teach them so much about men. They just go, really? That's why they do it, right? And it opens their heart. Because they get it. That they're not different. I mean, they're not wrong. It's like Alison Armstrong says, right? Men aren't wrong. They're just different.
That's
so,
very
I don't
smart.
Know,
I'm going
on and on, but I really, my ideal is to be able to really work with a woman and again, start with the inside, do what I had to do and start with working on you and what your truths are that are screwing you up and getting in your way and really replacing those with new truths that help you instead of hold you back. And then really defining what you need to have to be happy and who you want to be in the world. And who your best self is. And when you put her out there, she attracts the right men. It's simple.
It sounds, you sound so like at peace. And so you have this way of speaking that's very confident and very, but it's very strong, but also it's very gentle. I'm sure your women really respond to this.
Oh, thank you. That's really nice. I love the women I work with. I do. I have so much respect for them to get to the point where you say, all right, I need help. I'm going to make a commitment to do this. It's so big. I lived it. Thank you for that. Cause they call me I've been called the compassionate truth teller.
Mm-hmm.
My heart opens for them, but I'm also going to say, hey, it's you. Let's get to work. And it's the good news that it's us cause we get to fix it.
And it must be so gratifying when you see these people who have had such troubles and then they're able to, after working with you, actually find someone and actually just live the next 30, 40, 50 years with, you know, their partner and their someone to walk through life with. It must be so gratifying.
It's there's just nothing... I feel so honored, and there's just nothing like it. And you're right. There are women that were so hopeless before or women who just have time after time made horrible choices in men and are finally for the first time in their life feeling loved and feeling special and feeling understood. And it's like me, my husband, my relationship with him is the first time that I've ever been, you know, number one to someone. And I think
well,
that's probably
great?
What was missing.
Yeah,
that's what was missing growing up for people.
You know, I tell people, remember when, and this was true when I was a boy, remember when you were in elementary school and you played the trust game?
No.
Remember the trust game?
Is when that different than like, truth or dare?
No, it's probably like when you were like 4 years old or like 10 years old. You're in like the third, fourth, fifth, sixth grade. And the teacher says to you, okay, here's what you got to do, Bobby. You have to put your arms, like cross your arms, and you need to fall back, and you can't put your arm out, and you can't bend your knees, but the person behind you has to catch you.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You ever play that game?
Yes.
Okay, so yes. I played that game, and you have to trust that the person who's standing behind you will catch you.
Mm-hmm.
And some of us could do it, and some of us couldn't do it. And, you know, if we're young, and the person who's supposed to catch us, i.e. your mother, and the thing we talked about, and you fell, it's hard for you to trust without
mm-hmm.
putting your arm, you know, you feel like putting your arm out. But what you're saying
mm-hmm.
is, it's okay if you fall, you'll be okay. And you're going to become strong, and I'm going to help you through that. So you don't have to. You could go and meet a man with an open heart and do that not when you feel safe, but do it even when you feel unsafe. Have an open heart and then see what happens.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is kind of cool place to be.
Yeah, and when they do that, Gary, they're met with such positive experiences. That's the joy of it, right? It's like I know you're scared, but trust me, just try this. And
mm-hmm.
when they
yes.
start making eye contact or they share a nugget that's really personal and really, you know, scary, and the man says, oh my gosh, I really understand.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
so
yeah.
they get these
yeah,
great
yeah.
responses, and their truth,
mm-hmm.
a new experience creates new truth. That's what I say. And it's
so in a way,
in my
profession, you're called, you would be called what I call the transitional object, meaning like a little girl has her blankie, and that's a transitional object to the breast, and she takes her blankie, and the little girl goes out into the world and explores, a little 2-year-old little girl. So you can help these women and say, let me help you through this, through your fears.
Mm-hmm.
Let me help you through this. Let me show you a soft landing. Let me show you how we navigate these waters. And it seems like you've been very successful. I'm sure you have a lot of success stories of women who have found love and gotten married, and that's pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah
nice.
I do.
Well,
I do.
Before,
because
we are running against it, so how do people get a hold of you if they were interested in reaching out to you? How would they do that?
Well, my website is datelikeagrownup.com. So
mm-hmm.
if you go to my website, you will find, first of all, on the homepage, you can get my free video series. It's the 4 devastating mistakes women over 40 make in their search for love. It's really powerful, and they're coaching videos. They're really sort of really deep coaching. I'm not selling you stuff. And then there's also like, you know, over a couple hundred articles in my blog for them to read. So I really recommend, no matter what age, if you're looking for someone, if you're looking for a grown-up relationship, if you're looking for someone that you really can count on and that's going to be there, like you said, when you fall back, and that's what you truly want in your life, then go to datelikeagrownup.com. I would love it.
Bobby,
it
has been my honor, my pleasure to interview today. You sound fascinating, and I would recommend you in a minute because I could
Thank
just
you.
I feel it in my bones. You seem terrific. So
thank
I've
you.
Got to wrap up. Thank you for listening. This is Dr. Gary Penn. Till next time, be well.